Good morning. Today is Wednesday, March the 4th. Joining us this morning, Mr. 100% Mike Wilson. Good morning, sir.
I'm not 100% all here.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Oh, it was the high tension at the celebration party last night, huh?
I did not have one of those.
Oh, worse yet, it was a TV dinner.
No. I mean, do they even make those things anymore? Is that a thing? TV dinners?
They must. I mean, it's part of Americana.
Swanson? Was it Swanson?
Yeah, they must. They must. They have a Hungry Man meal or something like that. There's got to be somewhere they're still punching that stuff out.
I don't know.
Which I never really understood because they said hungry and it looked more like a snack to me than...
Yeah, but you're like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, so. Well, yeah. We all have our reference points, right? All right. Are you ready for our Why Do We Say That? Let's see if we can get one here.
Why are we even here?
Oh, because it's Wednesday, baby. Wednesday. Wait. Hey, and you know, we're not going to be able to see you quite so often now. I know, breaks my heart, breaks your heart.
You can see me crying over here.
All right. Needle. Oh, wait, that's not a good one. Because I've not heard that phrase. Have you heard the phrase, give him the needle? I've not.
Well, I don't know.
So I won't. Nick of time. There we go.
Nick of time.
How do we get the expression in the nick of time?
It seems like it has something to do with throwing something at a clock, maybe?
In medieval days, a tally was used to register attendance in colleges and churches. The tally was a stick of wood, and attendance was indicated by a nick or a notch on it. The student or worshiper who arrived in time had his attendance nicked, and so arrived in the nick of time. I'm glad they didn't do that when I was going to college.
Sticks?
College, not high school, college. Yeah. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah. So, impressions of the last 24 hours, the last day.
Well... Being that I didn't have much of a campaign for me, was I worried about other people? I don't know. Yeah, sure I was. I looked around and saw, are you talking about presidential stuff?
Just yesterday's election results, whether curiosity.
Well, I mean, locally we have, so far, Rex has, it seems like, done well.
Rexy's back, yeah.
65% or something. So that's a strong showing. Let's see, Estelle is almost at 50% last.
Yeah, five votes.
Five votes from 50% at this moment, but who knows what'll happen with that. Extend a campaign for, I mean, now that we have the, I mean, for me, part of the problem of California moving its primary all the way up into March is that for local elections and, you know, especially these ones that are county elections, we have these, we have these primaries processes. And so for a local election, this is just a lot of stress.
It's just elongated.
It's good for you guys because, you know, you get two elections. And,
yeah, we
and,
did before.
Right. But it was a lot closer together. Right. Now they're a lot farther apart. So we're spending, you know, a lot of time.
That California counts now.
You like that it counts? Okay.
Rather than being at the end and everything's pretty much decided.
I like that part. It's a good part. I'm just talking about in the local election part. So what we have now is like these very extended, potentially very extended campaigns. The other part that's that's kind of funky about it, that is if you're an incumbent and you lose, you're still in office all the way from March all the way till January. And so that's pretty unfair to the voters too. So... there was, and I don't know if we talked about this, there was a bill proposed at the California State Legislature last year that got all the way through and was vetoed by the governor, which would have a ranked choice voting option for counties that choose to do that, which would mean that you would have your election in November for local elections, and you would be able to do what's called ranked choice. So you pick your first, second, and third, and fourth choices. And in that way, instant runoff is another term they use for that. So that if your choice doesn't win, your next choice gets bumped in there, and they have an instant runoff right on the spot. And then that way, you only have one election, and it's kind of one and done. And in that way,
I can see both sides on that one. Certainly, the timing, the ease, that would make sense. But the concept for me, if there are four of us running and two of us make the cut, now the discussions we have and the debates we have might be significantly different.
Rather than
if there's five or six, maybe you hear about kind of like what's going on at the presidential level now. Well, now it's boiled down to two and
well,
two
it's
plus.
Another good example of why you might want to think about ranked choice voting in these primaries for the Democrats and the Republicans too, because we're all trying to second guess where people who voted for, say, Buttigieg, or if they voted for, Klobuchar, like where would their second choice really be going? Where would they really want their delegates to be too? And now it's just like you have to guess on who, when you vote for Buttigieg, if you think he might not win, right? Then who would he give his delegates to? Or instead of guessing that, you would be able to give your choice to who you want to. It's kind of
eliminate the need for conventions.
It doesn't.
A lot of it.
Yeah, a lot of it. It really hands it to the voters, really, which is it's a better and more democratic way to do it. And so that's a lot of people really want to look at this as an option, because it also changes the math on the two-party system that we have now, right? So this is why Republicans in general and Democrats in general at the party system aren't very excited about this ranked choice voting option. Because if you do ranked choice voting, what happens is you get to vote with your heart, I guess, or where you really want to go with your first vote, right? And you can be strategic with your second tier. Right? And so,
well, if now, they wanted to eliminate everything,
we just do it
electronically. Do it in November, everybody votes, and whoever takes it.
Right, and
it's
done. And so it gets rid of the whole plurality thing, right? So it's a pretty interesting concept in that it really does break the stranglehold of having two major parties if you were to have a ranked choice voting system. And
more like Germany.
More like many other places. I mean, they're parliamentarian. It's a little different. But in this case, you would have more options.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. So, Mike, on a more local level, we've also got the discussions going on with the virus, I guess the latest strain of virus. Are you aware, is the county doing anything other than just reminding everybody, which I think is rather prudent, wash your hands often, kind of the normal wintertime. Pay attention to what's going on around you.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit more. I mean, it's more than normal. I mean, it's different. There's definitely a higher tension to it.
Higher frequency of message, but the message being kind of the same one.
Right, and there are preparations, going on in terms of statewide and nationally about
That's what I was wondering. Statewide is the governor doing anything specific or different than what the federal level is?
There already has been planning done, prior to this related to related to these types of outbreaks.
Yeah, the avian one was
there's just already is planning amongst our, you know, health and human resources and other places within the hospital infrastructures and stuff like that. So there is that's occurring. You know, as everyone would tell you, you know, that it would be better if there was more resources and all of those things. But I would say that, you know, there's definitely preparation. And then there are folks that feel like there needs to be more preparation. And I wouldn't disagree with them on that. But mainly really what's happening is what you're saying is these messaging to people to really be aware and of their surroundings and aware of what they're doing and aware of the fact that we really need to be washing our hands more and making sure that we're, you know, not spreading the disease or any disease. If you're feeling ill or not well, it's like, you know, isolate yourself.
Normal rules of social engagement.
Yes, that's true. Just a little bit more.
Yeah. Don't cough on people. If you're sick, don't go to work. I mean,
those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So I think you know, it's just keeping an eye on it is what's most important. I have heard of people hoarding things. Like I heard that
grocery stores have got limits now.
A rumor about Costco running out of toilet paper, which I found somewhat amusing. I'm not clear. Maybe I'm missing something about that. But okay. I think we're going to be okay to a certain extent, but we got to be cautious. There will be people who get sick, and there will be people who will die, and we need to really work on trying to get better at our own behaviors to help control that.
And there is during all flu seasons too.
But
we just don't pay attention to it. And I don't know why this one, maybe because it's a late season one. Because it started in China and there was a dampening down of the information.
This is different than the severity of a flu. It's just basically the rate at which people die. You know, it's like people are saying, well, more people are dying of the whatever regular flu, but that's because it's so endemic and it's everywhere. It's like if this particular strain becomes that endemic, then we're going to see people we know die, right? And that's going to be a very stressful situation.
What was it today's? I heard Winston this morning saying today's the anniversary of the Spanish flu.
Right.
It came through in the teens and knocked out, 100,000 people, I think, is what
the number was. Well, I mean, pretty, a lot of people. And it has about the same mortality rate.
Which is kind of sad that we don't remember those things. You know, those major historical.
It was a long time ago.
I understand, in a land not so far away. But some of that stuff. I mean, we remember the bubonic plague because I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess it was about the only thing that happened in that century we cared to remember.
Yep. So, I mean, again, I'm sure you're reminding your audience members: make sure to wash your hands, make sure to be cautious about your general hygiene and behaviors so that we
pay attention.
Yeah.
I have a buddy who's got, okay, here's a quandary. You're of our age, generally speaking. Tickets to see the Eagles in concert in Los Angeles in the middle of April.
Uh-huh.
Do you go?
I would go.
So would I.
But I mean, in the current, but I'm not in April yet. So, you know, it's like I would wait till April.
Well, it was dropped into today.
Yeah.
I'd go.
I don't know. I mean, it just really depends. I certainly would plan on being disappointed if I didn't get to go. But at the same time, I wouldn't change my plans currently. How does that work? You know, it's like, I think we got to...
I understand why you got 100% almost.
You know, I just think, being flexible is important in these situations. And I think that's part of the issue. It's like, I find interesting that our responses to this kind of news is just like when we went out, just like when we did the PSPS, the
PG&E stuff.
Yeah, the PG&E stuff. The response for so many people was to run out and hoard, was to run out to all the stores and buy up all whatever they could and get in line for gas. And it was just.
Well, I think our mentality is, you know, the earthquake.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden, cut off, boom.
Yeah,
but nothing's available rather than, Why don't you buy a little bit every week and then you have that stuff?
Or more than that, just plan to use less. Just do less. Just sit down, relax, get your head on straight.
Watch the plants grow outside.
You know, those sorts of things.
I think rose plants.
I think there's a lot of resiliency in not doing things sometimes rather than hoarding things. And then we actually have these bizarre distributions of stuff everywhere, and it's not actually functioning well.
Reflect a little bit on.
So things. We'll see. I mean, that's just my general.
Of course, you say that as you have a plug-in car.
I do have a plug-in car. We can talk about it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Love my plug-in
car. What gas? KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
Locally owned businesses help our community maintain a distinct personality and to help increase tourism because we don't look like every other place. Small businesses also provide the ability to try on and try out items before you buy and get real expertise, saving you both time and money. When you shop, shop local.
Our award-winning camping department has the gear you need no matter what kind of camping you do. Come in and experience the many benefits of shopping with Pacific Outfitters.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, back to kind of more than normal stuff. You guys are, or the department heads rather, are in the process of developing their preliminary budgets. Are you hearing anything? Is there any feedback, any loop going on about what the different departments are looking at or considering or flexibility that they may have this year over the, well, I guess for next year, over the current year?
I really haven't heard much in terms of the budgeting process from any of the department heads so far. You know, it's an annual process. I'm hoping that pretty soon we'll all be getting into our strategic planning process for the board, and I hope that informs kind of the direction, you know, that because we give some of these broader directions to the departments in terms of, you know, what our goals are. I think
is that after the budgets are put together, or it would seem like it should occur prior to their
they definitely are happening in parallel, and so I mean I don't know what the changes will be necessarily from this year, you know, from last year to this year, from the strategic plan part. I do think that the sort of the vernacular, I guess, the words we're going to be using and the sort of spirit of things for me is definitely going to be, you know, pushing harder on resiliency, energy independence, those types of things. I think we're going to be talking more and more about those, you know, and by resiliency, I mean, you know, we have a changing climate. And we need to really be thinking about functionally how what we're going to do about that future. I mean, even, you know, we have some areas where we're vulnerable. I mean, look at I would say our power plant is even though we're now, you know, isolating it, it still sits at 12-foot elevation. Right. It's still fundamentally it has vulnerability from sea level rise that we have to be thinking about. It's
what's the life of that? Do you know?
Well, the new generators in there, the natural gas engines that are in there that power that are pretty new. I mean, they're less than 10 years old. But, you know, it still only relies on a single natural gas line that comes in. You know, fracking natural gas is learning more and more, has a lot more impacts, and it's, you know, it becoming less and less of availability with regards to that in terms of the way things are moving. And, you know, electricity from solar and wind is getting cheaper and cheaper relative to these sources. And so we really need to be thinking about how we're going to play into that, because we don't want to be left behind. We don't want to have a power plant that's vulnerable, and we don't want to have or a power source that's vulnerable, a single power source is vulnerable. And we need to help do our part to help mitigate for these changes that are happening. I mean,
is there any traction that you're hearing with the offshore wind?
Yeah, I think there is.
Is that measured in months? Is that measured in weeks? Is that progress measured in days? We haven't heard anything.
I think it's about a decade away in terms of like when the switch gets turned on with regards to that. But there's definitely a lot of movement in that direction, and there's a lot of potential. And the county and the Harbor District and other entities are really working together to figure out what the infrastructure needs are to do that. Because
the onshore infrastructure
more specifically, because to assemble these. Windmills. These are floating windmills, so you're assembling them on shore, basically on a barge, and they're gigantic. And then
they're on a barge rather than on shore, and then transferred to the barge.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yep. So you basically float in these floating barges. They're not like a barge you would think, a big square one. They're really like a giant tripod buoy type structure, and then with a giant crane you assemble all the pieces, and then you tug it out to its location and tether it to the bottom of the ocean.
Are these the cranes like you see in the Port of Oakland, the ones that kind of look like
No, these are much bigger cranes than that.
Oh, they're larger than, because those, yeah. I know are what, $1 million cranes?
Oh, they're very expensive. But these cranes are big. They're more like what you think of as a crane. They're not lifting,
like a regular.
Yeah. Okay. And these structures are 500 and 600 feet tall. They're really, really big. So if one's been being constructed in the bay, you would see it from miles away. I mean, it would definitely.
Do you think anybody's going to complain about the vista? Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think sure everyone will. Complain, not everyone, but there's always complaints when we talk about change in just about every way. I mean, there's
not enough to derail the project.
I don't know. I hope not. I mean, in the current context, we really have to be moving on these things. And I think what we're going to see here is movement in this direction, because we really have a strong offshore wind resource. And like I said, when you look at those lights that we're in this room right now, we look at those lights and powered by fracked natural gas, and it's really we need to move away from that if we're going to survive.
At the lights of the transmitter, make sure we're on the air.
Right. So, okay. There's that, and I think the county we're talking about a potential bond measure. We talked about it yesterday, really asking the voters to what their support might be for this in terms of what's our skin in the game? Because if Humboldt County puts some skin in the game, and it doesn't have to be a huge sum of money, but it got to be something, then the outside world who is looking for places to invest to do these sorts of infrastructures will be very encouraged by that.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:42.
Are you a business owner looking for financial or technical assistance? An entrepreneur looking to start a new business? The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and the Small Business Development Center want to help. With business loans, classes, and one-on-one consulting, our goal is your success. We've been helping Humboldt County businesses for over 30 years. Visit us at 520 E Street, Eureka, the Prosperity Center, or find us on the web. The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Small Business Development Center. We're here for you.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, with the lessons that were learned with the Terrigen attempt,
mm-hmm.
are there going to be parallels, do you see, with some of these other developments that are not necessarily associated with energy, but just associated with Humboldt County? Were there lessons learned?
Well, I think there were some lessons learned. One is, that tribal perspectives matter, and we're going to have to deal with that.
You're saying Native American tribal, not tribal as cohort.
Yeah, I think we understand.
I'm hearing
what that
it
means.
Referenced more often now as tribal being just groups of people that think the same.
Yeah, no, we're talking culturally, and I think we're going to have to deal with that at a landscape level, and we'll try and figure out what that is. How do we liaison government to government better is kind of one of the things we're going to have to deal with. But from
you were referencing with the Harbor District and the county,
mm-hmm.
and probably Corps of Engineers,
Yep.
And Coastal Commission and yep. and.
Yep. Yeah. And I think there's definitely some lessons learned, and I think we'll definitely improve in that arena. The other thing is we're directing a lot of our attention currently on projects that are related to, when we've talked about here, these microgrid systems, these solar / battery grid tie systems that offer a lot of resiliency and independence in terms of our energy. Again, they're not even close to as much energy, you know, orders of magnitude off the amount of energy that would have been produced by TerraGen, but they do definitely have a potential benefit in that regard. And so we're looking at some of those. And
is the airport that project, yep. I guess, is that a microcosm? Is that one of these?
Yes, one of these microgrids.
So people could then look at and go, now we understand
just
what's
like
being
Blue
said.
Blue Lake has one. The airport will have one. And, you know, when the airport one is built, and I think currently Humboldt County has probably the highest microgrid capacity per capita, you know, in the United States of any county.
Really?
Yeah, we're
some of the guys in the desert, huh?
We're already, you know, in terms of expertise, in terms of production, we're way ahead. But our solar capacity is still only at 5%, right? And we've been working on it for 40 years. So we have a long ways to go with that. And so part of what, when I was talking about this idea of having some sort of bond measure, some sort of skin in the game for the county, would be also looking at boosting what's called the PACE program. And I can't remember what the acronym is for now, but basically it's that finance program to help households solarize and get solar panels, because what happens there, it's like there's that investment, but it's really great for working people and homeowners, because it reduces your energy bill and you can spend your money on other things, and so it makes you more stable in that regard,
like bank payments.
Well, whatever it is, you know,
because the new one is it's in place now, so any of the new construction
right
has to have, and I think I heard $20,000 to $30,000, depending on what your community is, bump up.
Right. And so we're going to want to do our part to try and help boost that. What we're finding out is that businesses don't have a lot of access to those types of financing as much as we would like. And so if the county could, in this process, be helping businesses to do that, so that's another way. And then what we've talked about before is, car electrification, especially, transportation electrification is coming, and we're going to be really far behind. And if we don't really gear up on the part where we're providing or helping to provide homeowners and businesses and the landscape with charging options.
Is that the county infrastructure that needs to do that, or is
it's
that...
everywhere? It's a very dispersed infrastructure in terms of how that works. But it is coming, and we're having, whole countries around the world are saying in 10 years they're not going to be selling anything but electric vehicles, and so we're gonna lose economic benefit if we don't start making that transition ourselves.
Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow.